This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Teachers will join me, Linda Olson Osterlund, to report on the state of the country and the war. Then we'll open up the phone lines for your call. Tune in and call in this Wednesday, July 31st at 9 a.m. for Report from Afghanistan.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. In early July, I spoke to Veterans for Peace as they vigiled outside Portland City Hall. They are vigiling daily to call attention to the prisoners detained at the U.S. military prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. In February, the prisoners at Guantanamo began a hunger strike to protest their indefinite imprisonment. Currently, less than 100 continue the hunger strike, with some now being force-fed. And I'd like to let you know about an event that's happening this Thursday, sponsored by the Veterans for Peace, Portland Chapter 72, and the First Unitarian Church Economic Justice Action Group and others. It's Thursday, August 1st at 7 p.m. The event is The Grotesque Injustice of Guantanamo, an Insider's Account. And the speakers include Stephen T. Wax, Laura Sandow, S. Brian Wilson, and others. So that's August 1st, 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church of Portland.
Hi, Mike. We're at the Veterans for Peace Vigil. And tell me why you're here.
Well, we're a group of veterans and also people that support us. We have a group in Portland called Veterans for Peace. It's a national organization. We have a chapter here, which is Chapter 72. So right now we're involved in supporting the hunger strike by the prisoners that are in Guantanamo Bay, their right to, you know, to do what they're doing. And obviously, you know, the U.S. is now force-feeding them, you know, with probably things like Ensure or, you know, any kind of high nutritious drink that they're running into their stomach with a nasal gastric tube. And so it's obviously very traumatizing for them, and it's also what we would certainly call torture. And so we're just here to support them and have been doing so for the last, maybe the last 4 to 6 weeks. And so it's just an ongoing thing that we're doing. We got banners and we got people with orange jumpsuits on. We've also put somebody in a wheelchair that looks like they're strapped in with a headboard behind them. And then what we do is we wheel them out in the center of the street, and we have people one person is a soldier, another person is a doctor, and then there's another couple of people around them. And so what we're trying to do is depict what it would be like to see prisoners being force-fed. So I played the part of a person with a white jacket on with a stethoscope, and I'm running a nasal gastric tube down this man's nose, not literally, but he's also seizuring while this is going on. And it's interesting that I'm a registered nurse, so I have actually put a nasal gastric tube down people. So it was kind of interesting, at least as far as my background goes.
And did you say you're doing this in the middle of the street?
Yes, we just go out in the middle of the street while the light is red. We got a certain number of seconds to do that. So we're out there probably in the middle of the street for about maybe 10 or 12 seconds. And then as soon as somebody looks over to the left or right and notices there's about 6 or 7 seconds left, then we finish what we're doing and then we cross the street. And then we'll regroup. And then a few minutes later, we'll do the same thing going back the opposite direction.
And Mike, what's the reaction?
I think we get a lot of people that watch. I think they're stunned when they see it. And then, you know, we got banners and everything that talk about the hunger strike. And I think they're taken back, even though it's, you know, it's staged theater. I think people kind of get it that when somebody's forcing a tube down someone's, you know, down their stomach through their nose, and that person is actively, you know, in a seizure. I think it really, really says a lot to what's actually going on in Guantanamo right now.
And why are the prisoners in Guantanamo on strike?
You know, this has been ongoing now since shortly after 9/11, when these people were captured in various countries in the Middle East and brought to Guantanamo Bay. And of course, they're all saying, the U.S. and the British and everybody is saying all these people are, you know, are terrorists, when that's not so. Some of these people were just plucked off the street. I think the U.S. needed a large number of people there to try to convince the American people that these people are all dangerous and that now you're more protected, that we got these people in Guantanamo Bay. So they've trumped up the story that these people are terrorists, they're extremely violent, and then so on and so forth. And it's, as we all know, you know, it's a fabricated story. You know, I'm sure that there are some of those people that were actively resisting the United States, which I certainly don't hold that against them, because I mean, I was a medic in Vietnam. I was the enemy in Vietnam, and I realized that when I came back from Vietnam, that I had no more right to be in Vietnam than the Vietnamese had a right to be in Portland, Oregon. So I grew up a lot when I was in Vietnam, when I realized that I was not in Vietnam to defend democracy or fight for freedom. I was there so that corporate America could make mega dollars as far as what I considered an incredible business of war profiteering.
Why a hunger strike?
I think it's the last ditch effort of having some sort of control. I think that's the one thing. I think it's been done throughout history. You know, these people are living under such deplorable conditions. I don't care whether it's Guantanamo Bay or Pelican Bay. You know, it's the same thing. These people are fed up. They're being tortured, and they can't take it anymore. A lot of these people are on the verge of losing their mind, and the last thing that they have is a hunger strike. And I think, to put it quite simply, I think a lot of those prisoners would rather be dead than to be alive and suffer under those kind of conditions. You know, there was a time, I think, when the United States cared about their image in the world, but it's obvious that the United States government doesn't care about their image anymore. And Guantanamo Bay is a primary example of that. You know, I just can't believe that this country is continuing to do what they're doing in Guantanamo Bay with these prisoners.
Thank you, Mike Hastings.
All right. Thank you.
I'm here with Marion Ward. Why are you here today at the Veterans for Peace vigil?
I am really ashamed of my country, and I think the rest of the world knows all about Guantanamo and what's happening there. There's a lot of prisoners on a hunger strike. They are desperate. They've been in that prison for a long time. 86 have been cleared for release. And the United States has not released them. It's an embarrassment to our country to have this going on. I'm ashamed of my country right now.
What is your name?
Kevin Martinick.
Hi, Kevin. Can you tell me what the signs here say today?
It basically says close Guantanamo.
And why are you supporting this vigil?
Because I don't believe that the prisoners in Guantanamo should be there, or that they're being treated fairly. From what I understand, they were taken there without any charges, and they're being held indefinitely, some for 11 years now. I know that they're on a hunger strike, and they are not even allowed to do that, apparently, because they're being force-fed. So I think that's despicable, and we should not be doing that. If we're not following the Geneva Convention, basically, that's supposed to be applicable to every nation. So I think we're offending that greatly.
All right, Kevin, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm here with Mike Horner. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Karen.
And you're here at the Veterans for Peace vigil. Mike, did you serve in the military?
Yes, I was in the Navy for 4 years, from 1969 to 1973. We were in the, you know, in Vietnam, and it was hard just because of what we were doing there, you know. So I feel like the whole 9/11 war on terror, scooping up people from foreign lands, you know, on a hunch or on a, you know, on somebody else's say-so without any proof, it's just wrong, you know. And it again, it's the same, I recognize in that, the same dehumanizing of the people from Afghanistan, of the people, of any Middle Eastern person, really. I just recognize that same arrogant superiority that I recognized in Vietnam. So it's the same. It's the same imperialism that's always been, you know, to me. That's what it looks like to me. And I just kind of feel like you can't accept it, so you have to resist it. And that's, in whatever small way I can, that's what I try to do.
Hi, Jenica.
Hi, Karen.
And did you serve in the U.S. military?
Yes, I did. I was a Navy wave in the Vietnam War era. I was stationed in Sandpoint Naval Air Station. Seattle, Washington. I wrote training duty orders for two-week reservists, which at that time did not see any combat, unlike what's happening now. And so I went from a Navy wave, gung-ho, going to make the military my career, to travel all over the world and coming back to Portland and eventually getting hooked up with Vets for Peace, and now I'm a peace activist. So in my latter years of my life, I came full circle, and now I'm working as a peace activist.
Why are you involved with this vigil?
What they're doing in Guantanamo is unspeakable. And the fact that our nation, our government, is pursuing policies that are absolutely abhorrent is appalling to me. And we have to take a stand. We have to try to educate people. Force feeding is torture. The rap star, Yasin Bey, he's a famous rap star, and he said, force feed me. Let me see what it's like. Well, before he was able to actually get the tube all the way in, he was screaming, stop, stop, I can't take it anymore, stop. He said it was extremely painful that he could not go through it. And that was just one time. Well, these men have been force-fed, and they're force-fed every day. It's either two or three times a day. Now with Ramadan, they're going to respect Ramadan to an extent and force feed them only at night, but it's still extremely painful. The nozzles they put in are too big, actually, for the nose, and so scarring happens, and they're forced through the scarring. They're strapped down for this, and then they rip them out. They don't gently tug them out. They just rip them out.
Jenica, which countries are represented? Where are the men being held at Guantanamo? Which countries are they from?
I think a lot of them are from Yemen, but there are a few from all over. I don't remember exactly.
And how long have they been held now?
Well, some have been held for 10 or 11 years. Many of them have been cleared for release, and they're not releasing them.
And why do you believe that's happening?
I believe they're happening because they have been so tortured and locked up for so long that they are going to be fighting against the United States, against the imperialist policies of our country. And that, I think, is the reason they don't want them out.
So is that an issue of where they can go if released?
They can be released to their own countries. Saudi Arabia has a retraining program, and they said they'll accept all of them, and they work with them to change their mind against fighting back. In other words, it happened, it's over, let's see what's beautiful in your life to work for. Saudi Arabia said they'll take everyone to repatriate them.
No matter what country they're from?
Yes, yes, no matter what country. And they've been very successful in doing this. So I don't see any reason, really, why our government shouldn't, except that they have another plan that we do not know about to keep Guantanamo open.
Do you have any other thoughts about why President Obama, after promising or vowing to close Guantanamo, has not yet done it?
I don't know about Obama. I'm disappointed in him. I worked for him and voted for him, and I believe that he can be strong enough, if he grew a pair, that he'd say, no, we are closing it down. I do believe that he can do that. He is president.
This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. You are listening to Veterans for Peace at their vigil to stop the force feeding of prisoners and close Guantanamo. Now here's Mudlark.
It has a face, it has no voice, it has no eyes, it has no choice. There's a face that leaves no trace in Guantanamo. The face of pain, an empty mask, and all of us afraid to ask, what do they do to people? A face. it has no eyes, it has no choice. There's a face that leaves no trace in Guantanamo.
I'm here with Marilyn Pike. Marilyn, you have a black hood over your head. Can you see me?
Yeah.
Can you see through that? So Marilyn's here in an orange jumpsuit and a black hood, and she's carrying a sign. Marilyn, what does your sign say?
Torture is terror. I'm visual, not verbal. So I'm out here to have people see me, and they can see my sign with big letters that there's something wrong about Guantanamo. So they know that there's torture going on, and they torture people and put them in cages and with no charges. And it could happen to any of us. If they can do it to some, they can do it to all of us.
So I'm here with S. Brian Wilson. So Brian, why are you here today?
Well, I've been here today, like I have been many days since May, in solidarity with the Guantanamo hunger strikers who have been on strike since February 1st in protest of their conditions of torture and solitary where they've been for 11 years, some of them more than 11 years without charge and trial. So their request is to stop force feeding them and close the prison and release them because they haven't been charged for 11 years. So it's all about trying to bring this to more people's attention in the United States. The first hunger strikers started February 1st when Obama, I call him, closed down an office that he had set up 2 years ago to facilitate the closure of Guantanamo. He subsequently has reopened that office, but he closed it down in January, and the hunger strike coincided with the closure of that office. Because these people are rotting away and they haven't seen their families since they were kidnapped from more than 25 countries. And I mean, it's a medieval, sadistic, barbaric policy. And so their hunger strike is to try to bring attention to their plight. And some of them, I think, now would prefer to die rather than continue living in these conditions, although they choose not to die. But dying is almost a dignified way now of getting out of their situations. Nobody is helping them, certainly not the United States. So it's a matter of getting more people in the United States interested and concerned and sensitized to the fact that when we do that to other people, we're kind of sooner or later doing it to ourselves.
And how many people are we talking about?
Well, there's 166 prisoners currently at Guantanamo. There originally were 770. Of the 166, 86 have been cleared for release. Why they haven't been released, I do not understand. And of the 166, about 130 or 140 have been on a hunger strike. I don't know what the number is today. And 40 of them are being force-fed as of this morning.
You are standing in solidarity with people around the nation and around the world who are on hunger strikes. And I understand you were on a hunger strike, Brian. Tell us about that.
I started my hunger strike on May 12th. And on June 3rd, I was hit by a car on my way here on my hand cycle. I was pretty destabilized physically and mentally as a result. And I actually ended my hunger strike 6 days later after 28 days. I lost 24 pounds. But my cycle was almost totally destroyed, and I just got it back. My injuries were not broken bones, fortunately, but just a lot of contusions and bruises. So I was limping around for a while. But when I was on my hunger strike, there were several other people in the United States on a long hunger strike, and many on what they call rolling fasts, of which we have some here in Portland also, that are on rolling fasts, meaning they'll fast one day and then another person will fast the next day, and it continues. I started my hunger strike because I couldn't stand the thought of other people being treated the way these prisoners were, and nobody seemed to be caring about it. And I didn't have any strategy for my hunger strike. It was an expression of my own conscience, like me and the universe. Maybe that's it. But fortunately, there are other people now increasingly concerned about it, and I don't know what to do. You know, I'm opposed to just about everything the United States does and its policies. You know, their foreign policies. I mean, and when I was reading about force feeding the hunger strikers, I was wondering what I would do if I was in their situation and nobody was coming to my help. I couldn't communicate with my family. Nobody was caring about me, and I was in the hands of some monstrous guards who were treating me like a, you know, just like an animal. What would I do? And I thought, well, maybe I would just try to assert some autonomy over the fact that I'm not going to voluntarily eat. It's like some control over my life. And so that's why I was on the hunger strike. But
Brian, do you think you will restart your hunger strike?
I will resume my fast in September, but I haven't decided yet. I am 72, so, you know, I can take my time and reflect. I'm in no rush. Compost is my next big chapter. And I just want to maintain my dignity.
Ryan, there was another time in your life where you went to extreme because of your beliefs. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, my consciousness began in Vietnam, and there's been a lot of things I have thought about and done over the years, including civil disobedience, and I've been a tax refuser actually for 35 years, meaning I live very much under the radar. And I, at one point in 1987, I discovered that the weapons that were going to El Salvador and Nicaragua from the United States under President Ronald Reagan were coming from the Concord, California Naval Weapons Station in California. So a group of us began a vigil at that base in 1987, and right away some people started blocking the movement of both trucks who were carrying munitions on a road parallel to the railroad tracks that were also carrying munitions on trains. They started blocking the movement of those trucks and trains. In June of 87, I was simply a support person and a jail support person, but I watched these trains going by every day all summer, and I decided, you know, there comes a point at which I'm going to actually begin blocking myself. And on the first anniversary of the Veterans Fast for Life, which I'd been on a year earlier with three other veterans, where we fasted for 47 days on the steps of the Capitol in protest of Ronnie Reagan's policies in El Salvador and Nicaragua, on the anniversary of that, I began my block on the tracks at Concord with two other veterans. And there was a protocol of how the Navy treated protesters there, and it was, they called the police, and police were almost always there anyways, and people were arrested and removed, and then the trucks ran and the trains ran. And the speed limit of the train is only 5 miles an hour, and it's only on 3 miles of track. It has no place to go except goes from the bunkers into the ships and on the Sacramento River, 3 miles of tracks, back and forth, back and forth. So I wasn't really worried. I notified the base commander that we were going to start our fast on September 1st, 87. And I knew the penalty was a year in prison and a $5,000 fine. So I figured, okay, I might do a year in prison. I mean, accepted that as a consequence. I took my position at just before noon when the first train came that day. And the next thing I know, I woke up in a hospital about 4 days later. And I don't have any memory of it. To this day, I have no memory of what happened. But 40 of my friends were there, 12 Vietnam vets and other people in the protest group. So what happened was that the train accelerated to 3 times its speed limit of 5 miles an hour because the train crew was ordered not to stop. We found this out through depositions in court. And that I was, and one of the other two veterans with me on the tracks, we were on the FBI's domestic terrorist watch list. So it helped at least understand why this bizarre criminal act had happened, which is very stupid. I mean, it's terrible, but it was stupid because, first of all, you don't intentionally try to kill people that are on the tracks who are not armed. There's, by the way, there were 350 armed Marines protecting that train. They were protecting the base, and basically they were protecting the train and the munition. So they were all over the place. And so they said that I was going to, worried I was going to kidnap the train. Well, the train could only be kidnapped for, at the most, 1.5 more miles after it hit me. And it's protected by all these Marines. So, you know, it's all part of the fiction that we keep, the whole stories we keep talking about, trying to explain our criminality. So at any rate, I survived it. I have no idea. I went under the locomotive completely. I was dragged for 17 feet. I had 19 broken bones, lost my legs, fractured skull, broken arms, broken shoulder, cracked ribs. But here I am. So,
and Brian, is the vigil making a difference?
I have no idea. I do not know how to measure any expression of conscience anymore. I just know that it's important to express one's conscience.
Do the prisoners in Guantanamo know this is going on their behalf?
Yes, they do now. There have been several of their lawyers have carried messages to them.
What do you say to people who say that these prisoners in Guantanamo are being held indefinitely because they are a threat? They do pose a threat to the United States.
Well, how do we know they pose a threat to the United States? They were kidnapped from countries 7,000 miles away with bounty money by the CIA. Who pick people up because we have this notion of revenge after 9/11. I have no idea. They haven't been charged with anything, and they haven't been tried. I'm sure that if anybody that would be locked up for 11 years, taken 7,000 miles hooded to another country and tortured, I'm sure now if they get out, if they're even half not mentally ill, they might feel like they really hate us. But the fact that people say they're a terrorist, it's only because the government has used that word and the media has repeated that word. There's no proof that they've done anything.
How many prisoners have died in Guantanamo?
Oh, I believe 9 prisoners have died. 6 have been attributed to suicide. But I don't think anybody truly knows if that figure is accurate. We know that 9 have died. And, of course, you know, the American Medical Association and the World Medical Association, the American Psychological Association, and the American Psychiatric Association have all said that force feeding is in violation of international law, just the force feeding alone, and that it's considered torture. And the UN Rapporteur on Human Rights has said that solitary confinement for longer than 15 days itself is a form of torture. Some of these guys have been in solitary for years, in Pelican Bay and in Guantanamo. It tells a lot about who we are. From what I read, most of the countries in the world, certainly the people of the world, they know this is incredibly criminal and barbaric. The governments of the world, you know, generally don't want to offend the United States because they have various trade agreements and aid agreements. I think most of the world just knows the United States is a rogue country, and they're just praying that we'll collapse before we can do too much more damage. I don't know. It doesn't seem like the people of the United States are capable of rising up and obstructing the continuation of this criminal government. The only legitimate aim is the closure of the prison and the release of the prisoners, which the president himself has said he would like to see. But we know that there's rhetoric and then there's reality.
Brian, thank you so much.
You have been listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to our engineer, Danielle Parks. Good night.
KBOO Community Radio and Veterans for Peace Chapter 72 are proud to co-sponsor a special presentation on Thursday, August 1st at 6:30 p.m. An insider's account of Guantanamo will examine the illegality, immorality, and inhumanity of the U.S. Naval Detention Center at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, with Stephen T. Wax, Chief Federal Public Defender for the District of Oregon, Laura Sandown, a U.S. Navy veteran who served at Guantanamo, and S. Brian Wilson, a longtime peace activist, among others. An insider's account of Guantanamo will take place at the First Unitarian Church, 1034 Southwest 13th Avenue in downtown Portland. Thursday, August 1st, doors open at 6:30 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Taking you to faraway places and bringing them home to you. It's the Tiki Cha-Cha Club, KBOO's all-vinyl guilty pleasure. Monday nights, midnight to 1 a.m. on 90.7 FM stereo and around the world at kboo.fm.
And it is about 7:01 p.m. Monday, July 29th, 2013. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is KBOO's nightly broadcast of Hard Knock Radio, followed at 8 p.m. by A Different Nature, and then at 10 p.m. by De Solo Luna Theatrum. Stay tuned.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.